stand-up historian. Those who tell stories rule society.
Hello and welcome to Stand Up Historian. My name is Kurosh and I bring this show to you this time from beautiful Chicago, Illinois and not Seattle, Washington. Honestly, I have to tell you that I really enjoyed Chicago so far. It's a beautiful city with amazing architecture and a lot of history. This is the city of the good, the bad and the ugly. And the good would be Frank Sinatra, the bad perhaps Al Capone, and the ugly is very recent, and locals call her Beetlejuice, so they know who I'm talking about. Well, in this episode, I am going to talk to you about the power of media and how they can rise some people to the level of prophets and saviors, and when time comes, they can just destroy the same person and portray the same saint as a sinner. I hope you enjoy this episode. Before I start this episode, I have to apologize to you for the noise and the quality of audio in this episode. I'm recording this from my hotel room. I promised myself that I will do this episode regardless of the situation. There is a lot of noise on the Magnificent Mile or Michigan Street where I'm at right now, but I hope you forgive me for that. Thank you. For this episode, I have used an article by Tony Cox, who is a journalist and written or edited for Bloomberg and several major daily newspapers. America's sudden love affair with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Kiev's military forces is reminiscent of an old campaign to exalt a previous ally of geopolitical circumstance, which was, in this case, Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin. Just as in the Georgian strongman's heyday, the U.S. political establishment and mainstream media entertainment complex have responded to a crisis in Eastern Europe by portraying their preferred combatant as heroic friends who must be supported. In fact, Zelensky and his country's defenders have been painted as freedom fighters battling to save democracy from evil Russian aggressors, even as Kiev bans opposition parties, shuts down media outlets, and otherwise silences critics of the regime. The U.S. media still calls them a democratic country and a legitimate government. For instance, outlets such as Newsweek and Associated Press have touted Zelensky as a defiant hero, a modern Churchill. We know he's just a little man, a comedian, a little man-child in a position which he never deserved to be. The comparison to former UK Prime Minister Winston Churchill wasn't sufficiently glowing for CNN, which said Zelensky is quote-unquote more unlikely hero. Go figure, more unlikely hero. After all, the liberal network argued Churchill was an imperialist rather than a pure believer in democracy. Zelensky, despite taking such actions as arresting the main opposition party's leaders, banning critical TV and online outlets, and silencing opposition, apparently qualifies as a greater Democrat than a man who lost office by the ballot box shortly after his greatest victory over the Nazi Germany. Exaggerations by mainstream media knows no end, and why we are not surprised. 8 decades ago, we're talking about 1942, Churchill and US President Franklin Roosevelt faced a similar challenge in trying to beautify the Western public image of Stalin, a communist dictator, a hated enemy before Nazi leader Adolf Hitler broke a non-aggression pact by attacking the Soviet Union. Albert Marin, an American historian, wrote in A Time of Fear, his 2021 book on the Red Scares before and after World War II, there was considerable public concern over fighting one mass murderer with the help of another, referring to helping Stalin against Hitler. The joke back then was we're the same cold-blooded monsters, Marin said. But the Allied powers deemed support for Soviets advantageous to keep Axis forces deployed on the Eastern Front, where 90% of German casualties would be suffered, taking much of the heat off their armies on the Western Fronts. In fact, it was Russians which drowned Nazis in their own blood, and by giving nearly 20 million lives, they were able to stop Nazis. No other European country ever could stop Nazis. Or if you put all of them together, they could not present the bravery that Russians presented and stood against Nazi war machine and their blitzkrieg. The White House used its new office of war, and we're talking about Franklin Roosevelt time, Office of War Information, or OWI, propaganda unit, to burnish the Soviet regime's image while providing $11.3 billion, we're talking about 1940s, a wartime aid to the Soviet Union, which that $11.3 billion is equivalent to nearly $190 billion in today's dollar, if we apply inflation. As in the current conflict, media outlets did much of the heavy lifting. Stalin was depicted as Uncle Joe, as Churchill used to call him, a trusted ally and a brave leader. He appeared on the cover of major magazines, including 3 times in Time, which named the Georgian general its Man of the Year in January 1943. In January 1943, Stalin was Man of the Year on the Time magazine. Later that year, Collier's magazine did a cover story making the dubious claim that USSR was, quote-unquote, evolving, something resembling our own and Great Britain's democracy. The same communist regime was being painted as a democracy, something that existed in Great Britain or the United States. This was a half a decade after the Great Purge. And Great Purge is when Stalin wiped out somewhere in the region of 1 million people during an attempt to eliminate perceived political threats. Everybody knows he was very nervous, and the paranoia pushed him to kill even his closest allies. And all this propaganda to portray him as a hero was only a half a decade, 5 years after the Great Purge. The New York Times agreed, asserting in 1944 that Marxian thinking in Soviet Russia is out. The capitalist system, better described as the competitive system, is back. Life magazine promoted the Soviet leadership, present and past, including calling Vladimir Lenin a normal, well-balanced man who was dedicated to rescuing 140 million people from a brutal and incompetent tyranny. That was a strangely high praise, given that the US government didn't recognize the USSR until nearly a decade after Lenin's death. Life also praised Soviet citizens, calling them one hell of a people who look like Americans, dress like Americans, and think like Americans. Stalin's brutal secret police, the NKVD, the predecessors to KGB, were described as national police similar to FBI. Go figure this one. Whose job was tracking traitors, Life added. If Soviet leaders tell us anything, we can afford to take their word for it. Total trust of Soviet Union, because we needed their population. We needed Russians to stand against Hitler to defeat Hitler. Nobody in Europe had the courage or the manpower to do that except Uncle Joe. The OWI also made efforts to promote the Soviet Red Army. Yes, Red Army. A 1942 propaganda poster showing a smiling, apparently Russian soldier was captioned, "This man is your friend. He fights for your freedom." And target of all this propaganda is U.S. public and U.S. citizens in the United States. Now, let's fast forward to today and praise for Ukraine's military is similarly effusive. The Pentagon, for example, has been so impressed by Kiev's forces that its leaders have suggested their exploits will be studied by future generations of soldiers. Ukraine's fighters, quote-unquote, will go down in military history for their resilience in battling the Russian military, U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said in April. Even in defeat, such as Russia's capture of many cities in the last few months, the Pentagon has hailed the fighting prowess of Ukraine's personnel. This is unbelievable. So when we call this an empire of lies, now you can see that they built everything on the back of a single lie. They built a mountain on one single truth. But if you remove that single truth and put it on top of this mountain of lies, the mountain will collapse. And that's what the media does in this country. As an unidentified U.S. official has been quoted as saying that when Ukrainian forces retreated, they chose to do of their own accord. They're fighting against a superb army, like military, like Russian military. There's no question in their defeat. There's no reason for this war, except propaganda and instigations by the United States and Europe to push Ukraine to this war and push Russia to a situation that there is no other option for them except invading Ukraine. However, the current portrait of Ukrainian forces has required major airbrushing or photoshopping of neo-Nazi elements, which mainstream media outlets covered more openly before Russia launched its military offensive in February. As Reuters pointed out in 2018, dozens of volunteer militias in Ukraine use Nazi symbolism and recruit Hitler acolytes into their ranks. Ukrainian Azov and other groups are openly neo-Nazis. Even during the World War II, they committed atrocities that shocked even Germans, also against the Jews. Those groups have attacked anti-fascist demonstrations, government meetings, media outlets, foreign students, and minorities, among other targets. Reuters noted, and listen, this is 2000, and please pay attention, this is Reuters from 2018. Some 40 U.S. senators signed a letter in 2019 demanding that some of those militias, including the Azov Battalion, be designated as terrorist organization. 2019, only 3 years ago. But with Ukraine now a media darling, to the extent that major outlets acknowledge the country's fascist elements, it's typically to whitewash them. For instance, NBC News argued in March that because Zelensky has Jewish heritage and there have been no quote-unquote recent mass killings or ethnic purges in Kiev, it's absurd for Russian President Vladimir Putin to claim that Moscow's military offensive is partly designed to denazify the former Soviet Republic. Likewise, President Biden and other US leaders have mocked the notion that Ukraine has a Nazi problem. And only in 2018 and 19, they demanded to clean the country from this neo-Nazis, clean Ukraine. And typically citing Zelensky's Jewishness as their proof. Zelensky is not Jewish. His wife is Christian. He has said it publicly. He happened to be born in a Jewish family. And that is enough for them to portray him as an innocent man. And just because he's Jewish, he's a good president and he can't be a Nazi. No, there were Jews that collaborated with Nazis. And this little man, this comedian, is no different. Putin has the gall to say he is denazifying Ukraine, Biden said in March. This lie isn't just cynical, it's obscene. However, the fact is Ukraine incorporated neo-Nazi militias, including the Azov Battalion, into its National Guard after the country's democratically elected leadership was overthrown in a US-backed coup d'etat in 2014. And probably you've heard of or you remember the Maidan coup d'etat. Those fighters have been held for their alleged heroism in battling Russian forces. And Western outlets and media have amplified Azov propaganda and completely closed their eyes to the fact that they are Nazis. And they even went as far as to claim falsely claimed chemical weapon attack in Mariupol. In fact, immediately after the Russian offensive began, Facebook altered its rules to allow users to praise the neo-Nazis. Sometimes I think Nazis, when they came to the United States, they actually were brought to the United States by the military, and that's a great story. At some point, I have to get to that and tell you that story. But on the Project Paperclip, United States lost its soul and bring in all those Nazis that gave United States a disease, and we see the side effects of that today. We are effectively supporting neo-Nazis in Ukraine by providing them with weapons and encouraging them to fight against a clearly superior neighbor, which is, in terms of ethnicity, Ukrainians and Russians are the same people. They speak the very super, they speak a very similar language, if not equally language. And also, there is no reason for this war to happen except what the United States and Europe are planning to do. The new wave of apologism for openly fascist elements. Ukraine has statues, street names, and public marches venerating World War II era Nazi collaborators. Follows years of U.S. political rhetoric hyping fears of neo-Nazism. Democrats in Congress, including Representative James Clyburn from South Carolina and Jerry Nadler, New York, likened the then President Donald Trump to Hitler, and Jerry Nadler is Jewish. So they compare Hitler, they compare Donald Trump to Hitler, but they support Azov neo-Nazis. Go figure. And they're Jewish. Prior to the current crisis, Americans knew little about Ukraine, if anything, which consistently ranked as one of the poorest, and listen to this, the most corrupt nations in Europe. Poorest and most corrupt nations in Europe. When Ukraine became a big news story during the 2014 Maidan coup d'etat, the Washington Post found that only 1 in 6 Americans were able to find the country on a map. The median guess was 1,800 miles off. So basically, Americans had no idea where this country is. Nevertheless, once Russian tanks rolled across the border, Americans were quick to accept the new narrative about Zelensky and Ukraine. A Pew Research Center poll found that 72% of Americans had confidence in Zelensky to, quote-unquote, do the right thing in world affairs. In fact, the Ukrainian president ranked ahead of all other leaders in the survey, including Biden, at 48%. That's how they create perceptions, and that's how the media can, during the psychological operation, create opinion and enforce opinion to their listeners and to the society as a whole. It for at least affect a large majority in the country. Selling the public on Zelensky and Ukraine has been vital, given that the deeply indebted U.S. government is pumping tens of billions of dollars worth of aid into Kiev and leading the charge for anti-Russian sanctions, which have contributed to the nation's highest inflation rates in more than 40 years. And if warnings from Russian leaders are to be believed, the campaign to supply weapons to Ukraine and punish Moscow has put Americans and the rest of the humanity at the risk of potential nuclear annihilation, and all leaders doesn't seem to care about that. With the stakes so high, critics of Biden's Ukraine policy have been branded as Russian stooges or traitors. The New York Times and USA Today, among other outlets, have dismissed opposition as far-right rhetoric. Such voices have repeated the Kremlin's misleading claims about the war. The Times said, including unfounded allegations about U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine. We're not even talking about the corruptions and work that by corrupt Biden family did in Ukraine. Rolling Stone called Fox News host and Biden critic Tucker Carlson a Putin sycophant, while MSNBC suggested he was echoing Moscow's talking points because he wanted the U.S. to become more like Russia, quote-unquote, with paleoconservative and white nationalist principles. Hollywood was quick to jump on the Stand with Ukraine bandwagon. Actor Ben Stiller, Jewish, and Sean Penn went so far as to pay visit to Zelensky in Kiev, to the little man-child, with the former telling the Ukrainian president, "You are my hero." Penn threatened in March to boycott the Academy Awards show and smelt his two Oscars if organizers did not invite Zelensky to participate in the event. As it turned out, Zelensky didn't get to make a remote appearance, but the Los Angeles Awards program featured a moment of silence for Ukraine and an appeal for public donations. The Ukrainian president gave a recorded speech at the Grammy Awards in April. Zelensky had no reason to doubt the entertainment industry's support. He told Ukrainians in a March speech, "The whole world admires you, from Hollywood stars to politicians." And he was a semi-celebrity before he becomes a president, very vulgar comedian. Several major studios announced in March that a show to show their support for Ukraine, they were halting the release of their films in Russia. Good for Russians. In the UK, the opening of a blockbuster Guy Ritchie movie called Operation Fortune has reportedly been delayed because it needed to be revised to reflect newfound reverence for Kiev. That reminds me of 1984 and how they fixed the reports, how they changed the reports. This is exactly the same thing. I'm sure George Orwell tells us, "I told you guys, I told you this decades ago." It turns out that gangsters in the story were identified as Ukrainian, which is no longer acceptable. Hollywood was a key pillar in the campaign to sell Americans on Stalin and the Soviets. Studios rushed to produce pro-Soviet films such as The Boy from Stalingrad, Songs of Russia, and Moscow Strikes Back. In many cases, getting OWI approval for their scripts. In Days of Glory, starring Gregory Peck as Vladimir, Soviet fighters were portrayed as defenders of democracy. The Battle of Russia featured ordinary citizens depicted as patriots devoted to their leaders, a theme that was too far-fetched even for Stalin, who once admitted that the Soviet people fought for their homeland, not for us. Wow, they forced Stalin to say that. Roosevelt requested the making of a movie called Mission to Moscow, which was based on a book by a former U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union, Joseph Davis. The film portrayed Stalin as a kindly and wise leader with a fondness for children. It sanitized the Moscow show trials of 1936 to 38, which Stalin used to purge his political enemies, depicting them as a necessary step to expose traitors. Speaking to an audience that watched the movie in Chicago, Davis reportedly said, "The word of honor of the Soviet government is as safe as the Bible." The word of an atheist, anti-God system of government is as safe as Bible. You see the irony in what they say. Ukrainian-born Soviet engineer Viktor Karavchenko, who was assigned to Washington under the Lend-Lease program and later defected, cringed when he heard such gullibility as he traveled around America during the war. In his 1946 book, I Chose Freedom, Kravchenko recalled, "A thousand times I had to listen in frustrated silence while the Soviet dictatorship was given full credit for the achievements of the Russian people. Stalin's grip on the American mind, I realized with a shock, was almost as firm as his grip on the Russian mind." Once the war ended, it was no longer necessary to promote Uncle Joe and the Red Army. The temporary allies were quickly estranged once Hitler was vanquished. With the Congressional Committee hunting down alleged communists as traitors, and Hollywood facing pressure to prove its patriotic loyalty, Soviet-related films had a decidedly darker tone, as evidenced by such titles as The Red Menace and Behind the Iron Curtain. A U.S. poll conducted in March 1946, just 10 months after the war in Europe ended, showed that 60% of Americans believed their government was too soft on policy toward the USSR, while only 3% said it was too tough. By a 65 to 25% margin, respondents believed the Soviet would go to war to get what they wanted. Later that same year, a poll showed that 62% of Americans said their feeling had become less friendly towards the Soviet Union, compared with 2% who said they felt more friendly. The U.S.-Ukraine relationship remains chummy, though it's perhaps no longer in a honeymoon phase. Some observers questioned whether the ties were beginning to fray last month when Biden said Zelensky didn't want to hear Washington warnings early this year that the Russians were poised to launch an attack. Ukrainian officials called the claim absurd. Biden critics, such as Fox Business host Charles Payne and also podcast host Jack Posobiec, said Zelensky was being thrown under the bus. With the economics effect of the conflict multiplying on the home front, U.S. public support for Ukraine has begun to wane. Polling by research firm Morning Consult earlier in July showed that 81% of Americans remain at least somewhat concerned about the Russian offensive in Ukraine, down from 90% in March. Less than half of respondents, 46%, said their government should impose sanctions on Russian oil, even if that causes fuel prices to rise, down from 55% in April. Only 43% of U.S. voters, including 32% of Republicans, see the protection of Ukraine as America's responsibility, down from 50% in April. Nevertheless, Biden's administration is making plans to keep shipping weapons to Ukraine for months and years. The war will continue until the last Ukrainian is dead, a Pentagon official told reporters last week. Nevertheless, Biden administration is making plans to keep shipping weapons to Ukraine for quote-unquote months and years, a Pentagon official told reporters last week. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken reiterated late last month that the administration was committed to backing Kiev for the long haul. "We are giving Ukraine the support it needs to defend itself for as long as it takes, and we will continue to do so. And vague promises like this, what do you mean by as long as it takes? What's the objective? What's the target? What's the goal for Ukrainians? Back in May, Blinken linked America's heroic allies past and present. Those who study the past know President Zelensky and the brave people of Ukraine embody the spirit of those who prevailed during the Second World War. Well, there is so much to say about the conflict. One thing for sure is this war could easily be avoided. And when it started, again, there was opportunities to stop it. Unfortunately, we have a warmonger administration, and everybody on the left, unlike what they used to be years ago, against war and promoting peace, now they want more war. They want more weapons of war to be sent to neo-Nazis. I hope you found something to take from this podcast and from this great work that was by Tony Cox, and I added my commentaries to that. Please stay safe and try not to lose your mind in this upside down world we are living today. God bless, and until next time, goodbye.